This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with Dr. Bob Thomas, 93 years old, of Chula Vista, California. Bob spent 40 years as an optometrist, but there was one pair of eyes he saw over and over for decades in his nightmares. The eyes of a German boy, approximately 10 years old, who had pointed a burp gun at him when Bob breached the door of an enemy bunker. The 18-year-old American had no choice but to fire on him. If he hadn't, Bob and the other men behind him would have been taken out by that automatic weapon in the young boy's hands. What finally freed Bob from those incessant nightmares was a connection made at a 90th Infantry Division reunion 60 years after World War II.
Yeah, I went to a reunion, yeah. And there's Vern Smith and Tyler, and they happened to be in there at the reunion. And they interviewed me and found out that this attitude I have about nightmares. And so they took me up to a hotel room and they introduced me to a fellow there by the name of Bruno Ehrlich. Born on the Wrong Side of the Fence is a book he did.
And so everyone understands, for 60 years after the war, you suffered from nightmares about that incident where you had no choice but to kill a young German boy.
Oh, absolutely. But I had no choice because he was pointing a burp gun at me.
How frequent and how vivid were those nightmares over the years?
You never lose them. And I looked for help from professionals, civilian and VA, and they all told me the same thing. You know, you're justified, otherwise you would have been killed. But they were not the ones that had the nightmares.
So they told you that, but that didn't cure you. You couldn't shake them.
So when Vern Smith and Tyler took me up to Bruno Ehrlich's, Bruno Ehrlich was a young child, about 10 years old, and he was a German youth. And he was killing Americans. And a black tanker, a black fellow driving a tank, he saw him as a child. And so he captured him. And Bruno was so happy that the tanker saved his life that he came to all the reunion.
So an American soldier had spared his life instead of shooting him, captured him, and basically saved his life in the process. So out of gratitude, he would come to the 90th Infantry Division reunions to show his thanks.
Vern Smith and Tyler took me up to Bruno's room. And Bruno, we both sat on the edge of the bed, and he says, Bob, he says, that 10-year-old child was not an innocent child, forcibly conscripted into service, untrained. He was a killer. He was a highly trained, committed, highly motivated killer that without hesitation, he would have killed me and my 7 buddies behind me.
So hearing those words from someone who really was that young boy, he was in the same shoes, he had experienced similar things, hearing it from his perspective made a difference for you?
It made all the difference in the world because I don't see an innocent child anymore.
So did your nightmares stop or did it just change the way you interpreted them?
No nightmares because no innocent child.
Just gone complete. You've never had another nightmare.
I think about it, but no nightmares. I can't, when you're in this Siegfried line with all those bunkers, there is no time to think, you know. You just have to rush in and shoot and move on to the next bunker, blow off the door, shoot, and that's it. I saw an article in Parade magazine years ago, and one of the items in that was that the new war veterans are having problems with shooting children. So I wrote to the editor of the Parade magazine and told him about my experience with that 10-year-old child, and I never heard from him.
Well, it sounds like they gave you a pretty valuable gift that day. Can you help us understand how significant that gift was, that what they gave you by introducing you to Bruno and allowing you to hear his perspective?
What he taught me was something that you can't find anywhere solution. And so it's one of the life experiences things that often gets into one's life. But, you know, there were millions of fellows that were killed that, you know, they didn't have the opportunities that I've had. I feel very fortunate. I love my country very, very much. And a lot of my buddies are, most of my buddies are gone mm-hmm. at 93. But I love the country very much. I love all the people in it. And I'm fortunate to be here.
Well, especially since you also mentioned that close call with the Screaming Mimi. But I know that wasn't the only close call. Now, you know, some people can handle a story about gunfire and artillery and grenades and bombs more than they can a story that has a little bathroom humor in it. But I read here that diarrhea saved your life. I don't think I've ever had anyone tell me that before. Can you explain for me?
Well, first of all, when you're clearing villages, there are no rations. There are no places where you can get any food. So you have to live off the land. So in the forest there, they do have real small deer. And on occasions, we would be lucky enough to shoot one. And then we carry the deer into a farmhouse. And there's nobody around. And nothing. And so here we got this deer, and so we call out, and a little man comes out. And so we talk to him, or motion, whatever we have to do it, and cook it, and you can have some of the deer. And as soon as he understands that, wow, he calls out, and all the rest of his family comes out there. Boy, before long, they skin it, cook it, the whole thing. And that's the way it was. Otherwise, you just, in one farm, there was no animals. But they did have a lot of eggs. And so we hard-boiled a batch of eggs. And I ate one dozen of hard-boiled eggs and a jar of gooseberries. And I didn't know what gooseberries were, but delicious. There were other times, whatever we could find to eat, that's what we did.
If you ate that many gooseberries, they must have gotten your system moving a little bit. And you saw an outhouse?
Yes. It was afternoon, late in the afternoon, and we were clearing villages. And we decided to conk out because we were tired. And so we decided to do it to this last barn. Yep. So we went up to the barn loft. Everybody laid down and everything. And I was going to lay down, so I look out the opening of the barn loft, and I see about 50 yards down a dry riverbed. And on the edge of the dry riverbed, right down 50 yards away, is an outhouse, little outhouse. And so, how can I say, movements is rather irregular when you're in combat like that. And so I went down there, and I went in the door. And as soon as I dropped my pants, I hear this motor and the squeak of tracks. And by time there, near the end of the war, one of the worst machines came into action, and that was the King Tiger tank. So anyway, I dropped my pants, and then I was just starting to sit down, and I hear this motor and squeak of tracks. And so I'm looking through the cracks in the outhouse, and down the dry river, I could see a tank coming, but I couldn't tell what kind of a tank it was. And so as it gets closer and closer, a King Tiger tank, just big. And our Sherman tank has about a 7-foot long barrel, and a King Tiger tank has about a 20-foot long barrel with a big bolt on the end of it that helps break some of the concussion when it's fired. So I see this tank coming towards me in the riverbed. And as it's about ready to pass me, I see this big bulge on this long barrel, and it stops right at my outhouse. And it turns and points upward to the barn loft, missing my outhouse by inches. And it starts firing. Boom, chk, boom, chk. Boom. And as soon as it passed me, then I pushed out of the outhouse and ran out. My pants were down, so I fell flat on my face. And then I got up, and I ran up and met some of the guys, and diarrhea had saved my life. No question about that.
Were there other guys still in the barn loft?
Yeah, they're all killed.
That sounds like a sobering moment.
Well, one thing George S. Patton once said, a blue-blooded American loves the sting of battle, and that combat is a magnificent experience. And that may be true, but I was an 18-year-old kid fresh out of high school. And to me, combat was fear, cold, hunger, confusion, and survival in that order. I respected General Patton. He was an excellent tactician.
You mentioned the screaming Mimi that put you in the hospital. Can you tell me how that unfolded, what you were doing and what happened and what it felt like?
We were doing village clearing. In village clearing, there's just eight of us now. You go down the road, no trucks, no nothing. And then as you come to a village or a farmhouse, then you clear the farmhouse. And that means take the Germans away. Oftentimes when we would run into Germans, sometimes they would give up. And they did want us to send them back to their line. And so we would push them, disarm them, push them towards my line. Mm-hmm. Because they wanted to be with the Americans and not the Germans. So we were in village clearing. And we had to string, I think it's two guys or four guys, had to string a wire out on the hilltop so that we could report any new German troops coming. And it took a bunch of men, two or three or four, to carry the big spool of wire. And I carried a telephone. I was lucky. And so we were all out on the hilltop. We had just set up a telephone and everything. And then all of a sudden, German rockets, usually six or eight on a wheeled truck, fire six or eight rockets. And I counted, I think, two of them. And then I woke up in an evac center, which was a takeover castle, on a stretcher, which I was afraid of falling off of, laying up on a stretcher. Very nauseated, bleeding in both ears. It's just not a good deal. And so from the evac, they sent me to the hospital, and from the hospital back to a tent for convalescence. And I was in the tent later when an officer came into my tent and ordered me to ride shotgun on the back of his Harley-Davidson motorcycle.
And we heard a little bit about that earlier when Bob ended up at the salt mine at Ransbach and even took home some souvenirs from there. There's a parallel story that Bob is very passionate about. We'll hear about that when we come back. Bob Thomas, 93 years old, of Chula Vista, California, World War II veteran of the 90th Infantry Division, is our guest today. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.